It's stage 17 of the Tour de France, and honestly, that was one of the hardest climbs I've ever seen in my life. Let's cue that intro.
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back. It was stage 17 of the Tour de France, a 170-kilometre challenge, which took us from the beautiful alpine village of Grenoble to Col de Lisse. Col de Luz, Col de Lisse, however you pronounce it. My French, it's let me down all through the tour. I'm going to have to go on French classes before the tour next year. And all this from a man who used to live in France, I hear you say. Guys, you might notice sometimes at the beginning of the podcast, I appear a little out of breath. So I'll let you in on a little secret. I'm not going to claim any credit from this. The great motivational speaker, Tony Robbins, spoke about how when you need to motivate people, when you need to connect with an audience, you need to show up in a state of flow. And he said one of the tricks for changing your state is jumping on a trampoline just before you start talking. You can't come onto a stage, onto a podcast, and be like, "Hey, this is stage 17 of the Tour de France. You're joined by Brian Smith on Eurosport with my crap Scottish accent and my t-shirts that don't fit. And they're all the same design but different colours." What's going on with Brian Smith's t-shirts? That's what I need to get off my chest here. I need a little section called "What Grinds My Gears." His Scottish accent, it's barely tolerable, but he has a smug head that you just want to punch off his shoulders. He is probably the nicest guy ever. But yeah, I can't take it. He has the same t-shirt in three different colours, and it's too small for him. It's the size he used to wear when he used to race. So yeah, sort that out, Eurosport. Sort that out, Brian Smith. Anyway, I have a mini trampoline here, and I jump on the trampoline, like, just for 30 seconds. It's called a Bellicon. It's awesome. It's like an indoor trampoline, before you're wondering, do I have like 20-foot ceilings and live in some sort of castle? No, I live in quite a humble apartment with regular size ceilings, and the trampoline is the job. So I would encourage you, if you're a podcaster or a man who needs to speak, Zoom calls, everyone's going to be on these before Zoom calls. Let's dive into stage 17. But before I do, let me remind you all to head on over to the good sponsors of this podcast, patreon.com. patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. That's what funds the podcast, the Tour de France. It's a marathon for the riders, but also it's a marathon for me. And logistically, infrastructurally, everything, it's put more strains on editing, more strains on hosting, more strains on time, research. Won't bore you, etc., etc. But what I do need is your support and your generosity to keep the podcast going. If you think it's a valuable podcast and it deserves a place in our beautiful cycling ecosystem, I would encourage you to head on over to Patreon and please support the podcast. So before we start, as always, let's wrap up yesterday and sort of what happened before the stage started. Egan Bernal has abandoned the Tour de France. It's big news, but we kind of expected it. He had a pretty tragic showing yesterday, and we're kind of speculating, did he have to introduce himself as the new kid to the big 80-kilo fast men? Yeah, he obviously didn't get on well in school, so he said to his ma, "Look, you know what, I don't want to go back to that school tomorrow. Can I go home to Colombia, where I'm an absolute legend?" And they said, "Yeah, you know what, you can go home and you can come back to school next year." So that's what he's done. Bernal's out of the Tour de France. Intermediate sprint today, most of the points were hoovered up by our breakaway, but we had our own Sam Bennett increasing his lead over Sagan by 2 points. Bennett gets up in the sprint, Sagan gets up in the sprint. It's just tiny amounts of points changing hands at the moment. But in a race that's going all the way to the wire, who knows, those little 2 points, I prefer to have them than to be losing them. Our main break of the day on what was an incredibly hard looking day, where we finished up to call the, like, I don't even know how to pronounce that, call the Lowe's, L-O-Z-E. We finished up the Col de Lowe's. That climb was epic. It was like a wall. But we were over the Col de Madeleine before that. Two horse category climbs in one stage. And the breakaway that animated the day, it was the fans' favourite. And I know a favourite of this podcast, and he never comes in for any criticism, was Carapaz. To be fair to Carapaz, he looks super cool on the bike. He's a very stylish looking bike rider, especially when he's climbing. We had the housewives' favourite, Julian Alaphilippe. We had Iniesta from Astana. We had our very own Dan Martin. And we had yesterday's winner, Kamna. So he was obviously buoyed and didn't have too much champagne overnight because he was at it again. Kamna was dropped. Dan Martin managed to get himself dropped on a descent. Like, there's a lesson in there for everyone listening. You've got to be able to go downhill as well as uphill. Bike skills are as important as strength. You know, the brake didn't stay to the finish. If that brake had stayed to the finish, which it should have, you know, it was just that Bahrain Merida took it up into the bottom of the Col de Lies and they really narrowed that gap down. That brake should have stayed for the day, and Dan Martin lost out on a potential Tour de France stage win because he couldn't go downhill. That's pretty shit. You need to be practicing that stuff. He's normally not as bad a descender as that, but I don't know what happened. Julian Alaphilippe is a particularly good descender, but that's really not an excuse. We had this climb that I'm talking about, the finishing climb, the Col de Lies, and it's never been in the Tour de France before. But a little interesting piece of trivia, it was in the Tour de l'Avenir last year. The Tour de l'Avenir is a tour of the future. We often see riders who are going to make an impact in the Tour de France stage first making an impact in the Tour de l'Avenir. We like Pavel Sivakov as a previous winner, and I'm sure we're going to see him step up. We'd Egan Bernal as a previous winner, then a Tour de France winner. So to illustrate how difficult this last climb was, Sean Kelly, in his brilliant Irish mannerism, as only Sean Kelly can say, he said, "The road is so steep that you can touch the road with your forehead as you're cycling up it." Gearing-wise, the guys for this, I would say, you're looking at, on a regular road bike that you're out riding on a Sunday, we have two chainrings on the front. The number denotes the number of teeth on the chainring. So we have a 53 as the big, your big dinner plate ring, and we have a 39 for your inside. That's pretty standard. We actually call that standard, 53, 39. And then on the back, you'd have a spread like something like 11, 25, with 11 being your hardest gear, 25 being your easiest gear. So your hardest gear on the bike to pedal is your 53, 11. Your easiest is your 39, 25. Now, the gearing for this climb, the guys have gone with non-standard gearing. So most of them I've seen on Instagram were running a 36 on the front and a 30 on the back. A gear that basically you could cycle up the side of a house with. It's barely, like, you wouldn't be able to cycle along a flat road with this gear. But it's interesting to see that gear choice, because pre-Lance Armstrong era, like, you were taught to be a complete sissy. You were a fairy if you changed your gears down. It was the manly thing to grind up hills. But that's all changed, and now everybody's spinning up these crazy gears. And we've seen Carapaz doing that, because he dropped Alaphilippe, Iniesta, Dan Martin dropped himself, and Carapaz, he put in a big fight, spinning away in his little gear. Bahrain Merida came over the top. They just took control of the race from the Madeleine in Bahrain Merida, hit the front. Rod Ellingsworth is a DS in Bahrain Merida now. Rod Ellingsworth, if you're not familiar with the name, has come over from Team Ineos, Team Sky, that had all the success. So he knows a thing or two about controlling a race. He didn't sit back and wait, because everyone has been sitting back and waiting for Jumbo-Visma to take control of the race. And he said, you know what? No, I'm going to upset the apple cart here. And he stuck the boys on the front, and they've done a super job. They tore the race to shreds. The only problem is, they tore their own team leader, Mikel Landa, to shreds as well. Because just as his last little soldier boy pulled over, and you would expect that explosive Landa attack, Landa actually managed to get himself dropped. Nevertheless, that shouldn't undermine the correctness. Correctness, is that a word? Yeah, it is. We're making words up on the Roadman podcast. It shouldn't undermine the correctness of that decision by Bahrain Merida to take control of the race, because they neutralised Jumbo-Visma's riders like George Bennett, Wout van Aert, who we spoke so highly of. These got dropped. These lads were dropped by the tempo that Bahrain Merida were setting. Awesome. Then we had David de la Cruz really lighting the touch for a paper to tee up Pogacar. And the only ones initially that could follow were, well, I'll tell you who couldn't follow first. Landa obviously got himself dropped. Yates couldn't follow. Iran couldn't follow. Iran, interestingly, doesn't ride with a heart rate or a power meter or a speed sensor. Must be the only rider in the pro peloton to not use any of those things. That's an interesting trivia question. And when we're on the subject of trivia questions, I posed a question yesterday to seven Tour de France first-time stage winners this year. and I had a number of you guys entering that contest, and I had a winner, which I announced on my Instagram. So he will be getting a Roadman cap. We're going up to 8 today with Superman Lopez winning, which I'll unpack how that happened in a second, but Superman Lopez winning the stage, we're going up to 8. And assuming the history books don't come back and take that stage off him for being a doping cheat, we'll stay at 8 so far in this year's Tour de France. So we will see. Time will tell. I'm not saying he's a doper. I'm saying he has a head like a doper. Very, very different. Okay, that's a very different distinction. Not labeling the man a doper, saying he has a head like someone who is a doper. So Lopez attacks, and it puts people into all sorts of problems. Sepkus, Pogacar, Roglic. They're the only ones he can follow. Richie Porte makes a brief sort of attempt, with like an elastic band between him and the group on front, and he came in, and he went back, and he came in, and he went back, and it eventually it snapped. And in the finish, we actually had this kind of time trial nearly separated, with Lopez at the front of the race, Roglic chasing him, Pogacar chasing him. It was epic. It was amazing TV. The climb kicked up to 24% at parts, and 24% for anyone that's like watching this and they're riding out on a training ride. 24% is something you would contemplate getting off and walking on. It's that bad. It's ridiculous. It almost serves no purpose to build a road that steep. But the boys are just so good. They're so light. They're so powerful that it breezes up it, and it's beautiful to watch. The fans were out in droves today, and I don't know if that's a good thing given COVID. Most of them seem to be wearing masks. The French president was at the finish line. We had fans running beside, like, I think it was Carlton Kirby in commentary said, something about your man's not even wearing a mask. It's like, he's dressed as a dinosaur, and that's what we're focusing on, that he's not wearing a mask. But that's the era we're living in, and the fans had been called on to respect the riders by wearing masks, but it seemed to have partially went through. It's difficult. Like, I've been on both sides of the fence as a racer, you know, not at those Alpine stages in Tour de France, but with fans out at races. And I've been a fan over in Alpe d'Huez a couple of years ago. And, like, as a fan, your mentality is a party mentality for the day at a bike race. You're drinking from early in the morning, you're having the crack and restraint and, you know, clapping. It's a different crowd to the horse racing, like. It's cycling is a working class sport across Europe, and it attracts, you know, a crowd that don't take themselves too serious. So yeah, I don't know. I think it's, you need to shut the mountains if you don't want people to do that stuff. Shut down the access to them getting up there, because you're gonna have crowds. You really are. We had Pogacar at the finish line, which I thought was a super cool attitude. I just want to read out the quote from him, saying he lost a few seconds on the climb, but it was a really hard climb. I gave my best, the team gave their best, we got to our place in the day to show for it. The tour is not over, so anything can happen. I can win or I can lose the podium. We'll try. That's brilliant, isn't it? So yeah, that's brilliant. You know, I don't even know if we need to unpack that one anymore. I can win or I can lose the podium. He's going for it. He's second in the Tour de France, and he's 22 years old, and he's like, fuck it, I'm going to go for the win in the stage of the Tour de France. Now, talk is cheap, so hopefully he follows that up and actually does attack it, because he's got a scintillating day tomorrow to attack. So we're starting off in Méribel tomorrow. We're going 175 kilometers. We have a Cat 1 climb over Roseland. We have a Cat 3 climb. We have a Cat 2 climb over Col de Cisse. We have a Cat 1 climb. Then we have a horse category climb on the Monte de Plateau. Like, it's an epic, epic day tomorrow. Like, I can't wait for it. It's so, so hard. And it's been a feature this year's Tour de France that it's just epic day after epic day. But if Pogacar goes into it with that attitude that he's displayed there, tomorrow is going to be another epic day. And we're teeing up this big finale on Saturday. That's what we all want to see. I'm not actually that bothered if it's Pogacar wins, if it's Roglic wins. But let's just tee up this finale. It's going to be absolutely awesome. So today finished out with Lopez winning the stage. We had Roglic 15 seconds back, Pogacar 15 seconds back. Sepkus, interestingly, has come around after a great start and a bad middle week. He was fourth, Richie Porte was fifth. Great day for Colombia, what can I say? Superman Lopez, top step at a podium, and it's propelled him into third place in the general classification. So we have Roglic now, and Pogacar gave away a few seconds, so he's back at 57 seconds, still in striking distance. And we have Lopez rounding out the podium. He's at 136. It's real, real interesting. It's finally, finally poised. And I, for one, cannot wait for tomorrow's stage. And please just set that finale for us. Guys, before you head off and go about your merry day, I would encourage you to head on over to patreon.com/... You know what? I forget it. So I talk about it so much. patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. There you go. That's a tongue twister. That's like one of those things you have to say it like six times really fast. patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. I'm not going to do it. Guys, enjoy your ride and I'm going to talk to you tomorrow.